JC Corcoran Podcast.
I live in California, like Dino said, and I go home to visit my folks in St. Louis, mostly for the holidays. My Uncle Earl, boy, he loves baseball, though. He's a baseball fan. He listens to the baseball game every night on the radio. He spends a whole game complaining that the announcer is not telling him the score frequently enough. That's all he wants to hear is a score. So he just shouts at the radio, "What's the score, fat ass? What's the score, moron? What's the score, fat moron ass?" Like, his idea of the perfect broadcast would be this. The score is 3-2. 3-2 is the score. The score is 3-2. One team has three. The other team has two. The team of three is beating the team of two by a margin of one. The score is 3-2. Hey, folks, if you just joined us, the score is 3-2. Well, we're going to go down to the field now for a special report. Bob, what's going on down there? Larry, down here, the score is 3-2. But let's take a closer look at that score, the number 3. That's an odd number. It's also a prime number, only divisible by itself. It's one less than 4, one more than 2. That means if the team of 2 were to get one more run, the score would then be 3-3. Whoa, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Bob. Right now, the score is 3-2.
And from our undisclosed location, it is JC and the JC on the Line podcast for Monday, the 19th of April, 2021. That was comedian Greg Warren right there. He hails from Kirkwood, Missouri, which I'm sure a lot of people know, but a lot of people don't. And also with the new podcast that just kicked off about a week ago, we're going to be focusing a little less on just everything that involves St. Louis and the St. Louis area, and more things that have universal appeal. So from time to time, and the reason why is because we have people listening from all over the country, all over the world. We got a guy in China that listens. I'm sure he's an expatriate. I'm sure, you know, when your company comes to you and says, "Bob, we have an interesting business proposition for you. How do you feel about relocating?" The guy's like, "Well, if you send me someplace good, you know, maybe Northern California, maybe Florida, someplace with a beach, something like that. What did you have in mind? Where do you want to send me?" We're thinking about China, but you got to go where the jobs are. So anyhow, the point of this being, and don't kid yourself, there's a point on this podcast from time to time. We have to take care of the people who are not from St. Louis and would not understand local references involving St. Louis and the St. Louis area. So from time to time, you'll hear me explaining stuff. But anyhow, Greg Warren, real funny guy, and he has a video special, and if you Google it, it'll come up and cost you a couple of bucks, but it's called Where the Field Corn Grows, and it is damn funny. He recorded it at the Wildy Theater in Edwardsville, Illinois. Greg Warren, pretty funny guy right there. So did you ever go into work on Monday morning, and somebody says, "How was your weekend?" And you say, "Oh, it was fine." "Oh, yeah? What'd you do?" And you sort of sit there and go, "I can't remember a damn thing I did. This is me today. It's Monday morning. I know I did stuff on Friday and Saturday and yesterday, but I can't remember anything except yard work. Did we go out to eat? I don't know. I can't remember. Did I do anything fun? Did I buy anything? I have no recollection of anything other than a lot of yard work on Saturday." More questions than answers this morning here with JC. And I guess this qualifies, even though I already told the story on Facebook yesterday, but I spend a lot of time in Florida these days. We bounce back and forth from St. Louis to Central Florida, and we got places in both of those locations. So I'm in Florida right now and was yesterday, and yesterday we went out to this pond Because I started coming down here, in the 1980s. And every spring, I was down here for Cardinal spring training at Al Lang Field, which is in St. Petersburg. A lot of you came down many of those years as well. You remember Tommy, the singing vendor. But in all of those years, and a lot of times we were only down here for 5 or 6 days. But then about a year and a half ago, we got a place down here. And because of the pandemic, we sort of came down and then we got stuck here. And if you're going to get stuck somewhere, I guess that's a good place to get stuck in Florida. And you have the advantage of being outside and the weather is usually warm. So the spread of the virus, if you're careful, should be mitigated, even though the Florida numbers are off the scale because the governor in Florida is out of his mind. And by the way, I saw a story over the weekend. See, these things are coming back to me now, that of the people that have turned away from the idea of Trump in 2024, the majority of people are turning their sights in the direction of Ron DeSantis, the governor of the state of Florida. So watch that story. But in all the years I've been coming down here, I've never seen an alligator, a live alligator in the wild. And I know people who've been down here, 10, 15 years, and they tell me they've never seen one. Well, yesterday I got it off my bucket list. There it was, about a 6-foot gator. And I got a pretty good picture of him, too. And he was staring me down because, I was trying to get closer to him to get a good look. And he seemed to get irritated by all of that. So he was about 4 feet from the shore, and then I was probably another 5 feet back from that. So if for some reason this gator lost his mind and decided to charge me, I was giving myself enough of a running start to be able to get the hell out of Dodge if that thing decided to charge me. But I got a couple of good pictures, and they are menacing looking creatures. And when you start to think about how long they have been around, how much they have endured, and the fact that these creatures left over from prehistoric times are still here. And around Florida, by the way, if they're only about 3-4 feet long and they're not bothering anybody, the officials in the state of Florida don't really do anything about it. Can you imagine if there's, I remember back in the, somewhere in the middle 80s, they found piranhas in a lake out of Wood River, Illinois. And everybody went about nuts. And then there was this is coming back to me now. I want to say maybe 15 years ago, there was a gator something. That was in Chicago. There was a gator in some sort of pond. And it made the national news. But in Florida, there's so many of them that, like I said, if they're not that big and they're not bothering anybody, they don't do anything about it. They just figure, if he gets big enough, we'll come and get him. And then, when they get really, really big, when they get to be these giant things, then the fish and game people come in and they haul them away and they put them somewhere where they belong. And every once in a while, you will hear a story, including one Walt Disney World in Orlando a couple of years ago. You probably remember this story where some woman was walking her little dog and the gator came up and grabbed it. And I think there was also another incident where they grabbed a little kid. A little kid was wading in the water. And you figure if you go to Disney, the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to dehydrate from standing in line so long. One of the last jokes I remember telling my dad before he passed away, where he really laughed, I said, why Disney World and Viagra are alike? And he thought about it for a minute. He said, no, I don't. I said, because you have to wait around for an hour for a 2-minute ride. And for those of you who have been listening to me on the radio for years and years and years, you might be saying to yourself, what have you done with JC? This does not sound like him, because I've said this before. Some people are fearful of heights. Some people, if you said to them, what's the one sort of concept, the one sort of idea that terrifies you the most? And they will say, having to get up in front of a large group of people to make a speech. Some people are afraid of heights. Some people are afraid of water. In my particular case, it is alligators and crocodiles. Absolutely terrified of them, but also very curious about them as well, which is why I think people are a little bit surprised that I got as close to this thing yesterday as I did. But I don't know, call it a calculated risk. I left myself an out, because the whole time I was trying to get close enough for him for a good picture, to get a good look, I'm thinking to myself, what do I do if this thing storms me. And I had a plan. And my plan, by the way, is a lot different than my plan would have been 15 years ago before we had Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter, on the show. Because somebody told me a long time ago that if you're being chased by an alligator or a crocodile, to do a serpentine run, you know, where you're zigzagging back and forth because the alligator can't, you know, cut to its left, cut to its right, like it's Walter Payton or something. So you zigzag run, you do that serpentine run. And I brought that up to Steve Irwin, and he's like, no, mate, you're crazy. Whoever told you that is trying to get you killed. Run like hell. Get the hell out of there. But I've never been able to remember who the person was that told me to zigzag when they run, because clearly that advice was not in my best interests. And now this.
Nobody can do it like me. Nobody.
Nobody does.
Nobody can do it like me. Honestly.
Though sometimes I wish someone could.
Nobody's stronger than me.
Nobody has better toys than I do.
Nobody does it quite the way you do.
Nobody builds walls better than me.
Why'd you have to be so good?
There's nobody bigger or better at the military than I am.
The way that you hold me.
Nobody loves the Bible more than I do.
Nobody's better.
There's some kind of magic inside you.
And nobody even understands it but me.
That keeps me from running.
Nobody's better.
But just keep it coming.
I know what it means.
How'd you learn to do the things you do?
Nobody's fighting for the veterans like I'm fighting for the veterans.
Nobody does it better.
There's nobody that's done so much for equality as I have.
There's nobody more conservative than me.
Nobody does it half as good as you.
Nobody would be tougher.
Baby, baby.
Nobody knows more about trade than me.
Darling, you're the best.
There's nobody that respects women more than I do.
Baby, you're the best.
Nobody's ever had crowds like Trump has had.
There's nobody that understands the horror of nuclear better than me.
Knows the game better than I do.
Nobody in the history of this country has ever known so much about infrastructure as Donald Trump.
I know the H-1B. I know the H-2B. Nobody knows it better than me.
Nobody knows politicians better than I do.
Nobody knows more about taxes than I do.
Nobody knows more about debt than I do.
Nobody knows the system better than me, which is why I alone can fix it.
Returning to our top story. According to some beauty experts, more women than ever are shaving their faces. And it's not just to get rid of your gorgeous mustache or those sexy sideburns. Some dermatologists recommend doing it to help exfoliate the skin. Dr. David Kim, dermatologist, San Francisco, and he says that shaving your face can accomplish a lot of the same things you'd get from a dermaplaning treatment. Quote, dermaplaning or dermaplaning? I'm just guessing here, is when you take a very gentle, blunt scalpel and you scrape over the surface of your skin on the face or anywhere else on the body to gently exfoliate. Yeah, the words scalpel and gently, to me, don't seem to go together. Anyhow, this whole thing is supposed to remove dead skin cells and dirt and oil accumulation. There are some female Instagram influencers pushing face shaving, of course. One of them is a woman named Megan Carboni, and she says she's on a mission to normalize female facial shaving. She's also selling female shaving kits that start at $25. A woman in Arizona woke up on Thursday to find someone had slashed her tires, and in the process of doing so, accidentally cut off their own finger in the process and left the finger behind. The police bagged it, and she's waiting to hear from them. They can get a fingerprint off of that. And there's a video from the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission that shows a young kid getting trapped and pulled underneath a Peloton treadmill. The CPSC is saying people should stop using the treadmills immediately. Oh, great. What do those things cost? Like $2,000? And maybe during the pandemic, you figured, okay, well, this is terrible, but when this thing is over and I go back out on the streets, I'm going to look absolutely smoking because I'm on this Peloton thing every day, and now they tell you you can't do that either. Every year on this date, I get a little nervous because in 1993, on this day, it was 28 years ago, remember that guy David Koresh? 86 of his followers, 17 children, died in that raging fire at the Branch Davidian headquarters in Waco, Texas, after the FBI tried to drive them out with tear gas. The FBI called the deaths a mass suicide. So that was 93. 2 years later, in 95, that's when this Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols were involved in the truck bomb that destroyed the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City, killing 168 people, hundreds more injured. And this is the anniversary of all of that stuff. You wouldn't catch me in a federal building today. Let's just put it that way. Let's give you the COVID update. The newest COVID shortage is bubble tea. There's a shortage of the boba balls and also a shortage of the tapioca starch that is used to make them. One importer says in the next week or so, tapioca will be a luxury. A guy bought a full-body green man suit so when he walked behind his fiance's Zoom calls, he would disappear into her green screen virtual background. But the video shows it didn't really work, mostly because you can still see his face. University of Alabama's spring football game had 47,218 fans, the biggest sports crowd in the U.S. since the pandemic started. That was around 50% capacity for the football stadium for a spring football game that doesn't count for anything. And a woman at a grocery store in Ohio punched an employee and bit another consumer when somebody asked her to put on a mask. And here's something comforting. An ex-McDonald's employee got on Reddit and claimed Sundays are the worst day for fast food because senior management is never there. So everyone slacks off and quality suffers. We've also seen people claim that Monday is the worst day, though, because employees are burnt out from the weekend and because a lot of restaurants get shipments on Tuesdays, so some of the ingredients aren't as fresh. And CBS announced they're renewing NCIS for a 19th season. It's been on so long that when it premiered, some of its viewers weren't even retired yet.
I started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
Today and tomorrow on the podcast, we are featuring a conversation I had a couple of months ago with Don McLean. Hard to believe that we're up on the 50th anniversary of the release of that song. And sometimes when you schedule these interviews, you think to yourself, all right, this will be a really good one, or this one will be, not expecting that much. And in the case of Don McLean, I don't know why, but I just figured, well, he's going to talk about American Pie, and it's sort of going to be it, even though he had some other hit songs. I'm just not expecting that much. Wow, did I get a surprise. We're featuring our conversation with Don McLean today and tomorrow here on the podcast. Here's part one. Don, by my way of thinking, and I was doing radio back in 1971, and everything was against you. You were an unknown artist. You had a song that was filled with obscure references, and it was 8.5 minutes long, which was absolutely unheard of, especially for AM Top 40 radio back in 1971. I'm reminded of the scene in We Will Rock You, where the record executive, played by Mike Myers, is telling Freddie Mercury and the rest of the guys, nobody is ever going to play Queen. They're just not going to do it. Were there episodes in your life back around 1970 where you had similar conversations with your manager, your record company, and people like that?
Well, I was a sort of an FM sensation, you know, in the beginning with the first album I made called Tapestry. And so that, I was sort of an underground guy. And they would play the whole record sometimes. And then all of a sudden, this American Pie album came out. And it was, number one. And everybody said that I'd sold out. So now I lost my underground audience and I gained this huge pop audience. So, you know, I was always doing different things, which was causing me to lose my audience and then gain them again. So it was much bigger than just somebody saying, they won't play that, because actually United Artists signed me based upon the fact that they liked that song, but they broke it down to basically a little single with a lot of chorus and a couple of verses, and that immediately went to number one. And then the album came out, everybody bought it, and they wanted, they heard the whole thing, and they called the record stations and radio stations, and they went and played the album cut on the radio on the top 10. So it was a mess, you know, but eventually we muddled through.
Yeah, they refer to you in all these stories as a cultural phenomenon, which is a polite way of saying that you started becoming more successful and started making a little more money, but it also usually means that your personal life turns into a living hell. How crazy was it back then when the song just exploded in popularity all over the world?
Well, you don't have any life that's your own, and it's not fun. You have to learn to be a performer, and you have to learn about wearing a harness. You know, you're on the stage every night, you're working very hard. And I'm not complaining. You know, I had no money, and after this I was a millionaire, so, you know. And I like to work, and I love music, and I love the audience, so I was right in my element. But it's not an adventure anymore. Now it is hard-nosed numbers, tickets sold and then records sold and all this stuff. And so it takes some of the romance out of it. And you don't have any time for romance, by the way, either, because, you know, wherever you go, you're leaving the next day. So it's very difficult in that way. You have to almost be stoic about it. And, of course, you have to learn to live on the road so you don't get sick, you don't lose your voice, you don't come unglued and start, you know, going on a, some kind of crying jag or whatever. If it happens to people, you know. You have to learn a lot of things about how to survive as a success. And surviving success is harder than living with failure in some ways.
And you lost your father when you were only 15 years old. How nice it would have been to be able to pick up the phone and call Dad and just tell him about what's going on, and maybe he would throw some advice your way. Who was sort of bolstering you? Who was helping you? Who were you turning to during those very, very trying times, considering you didn't have a father?
Well, I don't turn to people. You know, I figure stuff out myself, unfortunately. That's probably a weak point in today's world, but I was one of those masculine guys, you know, who liked to figure things out and on his own. And that's what I did, and I learned a lot that way. I mean, I would develop relationships with, you know, key people that I knew and ask them this or that question. But the biggest thing I did and the best thing I did was about, oh, I guess, around 1978. I had been running so hard right from the 19 for about 10 years. And I was having another hit record, Crying, and which was all over the world. And I said, look, I'm going to do this at a reasonable pace because I just am not going to run like crazy anymore. So that's when I sort of slowed things down just a little bit. And that was the best move I ever made because, you know, people who make money from you want you to work as much as possible. And, you know, look at Elvis Presley. I mean, doing, you know, 60 shows a month in Las Vegas. I mean, are you kidding me? Two shows a night and then going back out on the road. I mean, that's working somebody to death, and they'll do it.
You brought up the song Crying. Roy Orbison made that song famous the first time around. The man could hit five octaves. You have a tremendous voice. You talked about taking care of yourself, not getting sick on the road. That's sort of a daunting task to take a song, again, with a guy who has a vocal range like that. And you say, no, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to really do justice to it. Just talk about that a little bit.
Well, I love that song. I had had a, a bit of a breakdown, actually, in the mid-1970s, and that was what got me rethinking things. And I understood that song, and in addition to a bunch of songs that I had written, I went to Nashville with Larry Butler, who's a great producer, who's passed away now, unfortunately. And we made an album, and I said, I want to sing Crying. And so I sang the heck out of it, you know, in the studio. and I heard it back, and I thought, wow, that is just really nice. You know, it was beautiful. And it went to number one all over the world, I think number three in the United States. And I was back, you know. But then I realized, wow, I got to do this every night now, you know. So that took a lot of training to sing it at the right moment in the show, you know, when my voice was ready to do it. And so I had to learn how to do that. But, yeah, I still sing it.
I want to swing back around, talk about the website, the tour, the new music, the merchandise, all that sort of stuff, the 50th anniversary of American Pie. But I'll go back further than that. Eli's coming in, lots of great songs written by one of the great American songwriters of her era, Laura Nyro. You toured with her. What was that like? What did she teach you? What did you pick up? Just talk about that era.
Well, in those days, I was an opening act to a lot of... I was with William Morris, so I would open to her. I would open to Three Dog Night, Ten Wheel Drive, The James Gang, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Steppenwolf, I toured with a lot. And it was fun. You know, we were all rock and roll singers and players, and they loved me, and I liked what they did. And, you know, you're just in the middle of it. And you see, funny thing I learned is sometimes we go down south or someplace and have a couple or 3,000 people in a place, and Steppenwolf, you know, would get on stage and like nothing would happen. I mean, it was like really flat. And I was always used to them having people go crazy, you know, when they sang or when they were on there. So I realized that, you know, a lot of it doesn't always happen, even for the best of them. You know, you're going to have nights that are not quite as exciting as other nights. So that's one thing you learn about. It's just, you know, a lot by doing it, you know, because a lot of what we are involved in is fantasy. You know, we have a fantasy of how this is going to be if we ever become famous. And really... it ain't like that. It's hills and valleys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. One of the other songs that people really enjoy that you've done, your whole body of work is fantastic. But, you know, obviously American Pie, Crying, and then Vincent, your musical tribute to Vincent Van Gogh. I think that threw some people because they're like, whoa, wait a minute. Top 40 songs about 19th century artists, not exactly... A match made in heaven. What was the inspiration for that song, and what would you like people to know about what went into the recording of Starry, Starry Night? Go ahead.
Well, I write my songs on the guitar, and they have to stand up by themselves. You can orchestrate them. You can put a rock and roll band to some of them, but they have to stand up with just voice and guitar. And that song came out from the album, and it went top 10, it went number one all over the world. So that prevented me from being a one-hit wonder. At that point, I had two hits under my belt that were seriously good and very different. And then, you know, Castles in the Air, later on charted top 10, And I Love You So was recorded by a lot of people, including Elvis Presley, for one for Perry Como. He had a million seller with it in the mid-70s. So the old-timers were still around and scoring back then. People forget that. There was still old-time show business was still very active. And so I was having a lot of success in all sorts of areas. And people would ask me about the Van Gogh song, and I explained that I was reading about him, and I was always kind of interested in him, but I decided to do a song about him because the paintings spoke to me. They made it very easy to find the imagery to describe his life and his life story. And, you know, he's the kind of artist that everybody knows, you know, children know him, and just everybody knows Van Gogh. They know his sad story, or they think it's a sad story. He's actually quite successful as an artist, but they know these powerful paintings. So it was easy because I already had a famous subject that people already knew. So to create a piece of music about him, just kind of brought him a little bit more to life. So that was the challenge. And in making the record, I recorded it completely acoustic, just me and the guitar, one take.
One take.
And then we add. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I do a lot of things like that. Crying was one take also.
Wow. So that's part one and some really great stuff in part two, and you'll get that tomorrow morning here on the podcast. All right, as I have been saying, I need your help. I really need your help. We don't have any big advertising budget to promote the fact that we started doing the podcast, so it's got to be word of mouth. So if you have the opportunity, just run over to somebody else's cubicle today, or when you're doing your Zoom call, tell all 50 people on your screen, hey, you know, JC back doing a podcast, jcontheline.com. That's all you got to know. We'll see you bright and early tomorrow morning at 7. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.